Hello and welcome to another catch-up episode. You know the story, if you're on your own, I'm going to ask you how you are. Just one word, say how you are. Go on, no one's listening. How are you? Amazing. Amazing you chose that word out of all the other words you could have chosen. How am I? I'm very well, thank you for asking. I've been really busy. It was funny, like about 3 weeks ago, I spent like, I don't know, it felt like I spent 10 days trying to organize artists for episodes, and nothing came together. It was like there was a whole week or 10 days where people were unavailable. They were all willing, happy to do it, but just unavailable, or emails weren't getting through or whatever. And then suddenly it was like everybody was ready and I had loads of recording all one thing after another. So yeah, very busy, but busy in a good way. Quite a few questions come in on the old socials, so I'll just get straight into them. Bill from Texas asks, what's with the long hair? Dude, did he say dude? Yeah, he did. Well, it's a very personal question, Bill. Yeah, I don't really have a good reason. I mean, there are lots of reasons I have after the fact, but it's not, none of these were before the fact, meaning it's not like my hair was short. Like if you look back at the earlier podcasts, which, you know, the podcast started around 2013, and the first 12 I videoed them as well, so you can see what I look like, and my hair was much shorter. Speaking of which, actually, somebody was saying, oh, I really like that, you know, the last podcast about the, you know, and you read out about the book, and I like that whole side of things. Well, go back to the very start, to the first 12 episodes. They are in video format as well as just, you know, the usual like this, audio only. Because, yeah, I talk about all that kind of stuff back then. And, you know, these catch-up episodes, often in many ways, the subjects we touch on are very similar to what I talk about back then. Each one of those first 12, you know, they do kind of focus on a particular topic or area, and they were as an adjunct to that book, May Annoyance. But yeah, if you like this kind of thing, definitely go back right to the beginning and have a listen to the first 12. And you'll notice that my hair was much shorter back then. So yeah, it's not like I was back then going, what I really need to do is grow my hair really long. Didn't happen like that. It just grew on me. And then the after the fact kind of things, there was a thing, a meme or something doing the rounds, feels like about a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, about this Native American Indian thing about they had long hair and they were able to, you know, use their long hair was like an antennae and they made them more sensitive to, you know, what was going on and the earth and all that kind of thing. And if it was cut, they would feel like they were blind. Again, I'm just half remembering it, but I remember at the time going, oh yeah, that sounds that sounds great. But you know, I sort of feel like if when I think about, you know, because every now and then I think about cutting it off because it's a pain. Like, God, it takes forever to wash, you know, and fiddle around with, and I can't leave it out because it blows on my face. And there's many parts of it that are, you know, inconvenient, especially like being a man and being raised as a man. I wasn't really conditioned to fuss about myself. So having long hair is borderline fussing about myself. So, you know, every now and then I kind of get sick of it and go, oh, that's it, I'm going to cut it off. Or I think about it. And when I think about it, I do have a feeling of, no, it's kind of like, I do think of that antennae thing and whatever. But I mean, I was really reasonably sensitive, probably more sensitive than most people say that they are, before I had long hair. So I don't know if it increased it or not. Another thing that's kind of I've realized is that there's many men my kind of age who are, one guy described it as follicularly challenged, which is a nice way of saying bald, or they've lost hair. So in a way, a man who's having trouble losing his hair or bald, you know, who's around the same age as me, looks at me, it's either, you know, rock on, dude, was the vibe, and like, yay, or I hate you, I want you to die. But I sort of think it's nice to have longer hair, if, you know, because there's a lot of men who would love to be able to have longer hair as well. So there's that. It's also, you know, it's a backup career. I could get a job as an extra on any of the, you know, Vikings or Game of Thrones or Last Kingdom, any of those things, many of which were, you know, shot in Ireland. So, you know, that's not as silly as it sounds. So there's that as well. You know, I've got that in the back pocket. But yeah, I have no good reason. Many things in my life, I have no good reason for doing them. It's just intuitive. I just do them and then I come up with reasons afterwards. Not that I, you know, come up with reasons, but, you know, I'll rationalize it afterwards. But yeah, no, it just, I mean, I'm joking. It did kind of just grow on me. It just, I wanted to cut it less and less and less. And that's how that came about, Bill, but thanks for asking. Blake in San Francisco asks, did your scythe arrive? And if yes, how is it? Blake's referring to when I was talking to Adrian Stein and Kwang Ho. We got off on a tangent about that I had ordered a scythe, like, you know, the Grim Reaper scythe, because I'm trying in my garden here. I'm trying to be more of a guardian and less of a gardener. And that's kind of come over, you know, number of years. I was raised in the suburbs of the, you know, Dublin. So I've very little connection with the land or gardening. I didn't have a green thumb by any stretch. But since living here in Kerry for the last, you know, six, seven years, whatever, it's kind of got into me more and more. And I've been looking at the nature and getting more connected with it. And I've been just, I think it was early this year or over Christmas, I got this book called The Garden Awakening by Mary Reynolds, which sort of brought together a lot of things that to do with the land and connecting with the land and you know, biodiversity and all that kind of thing. And just rewilding your garden and allowing your garden to express itself and your garden to be, that your garden has a personality and that it has issues and that you can commune with it. And I know that all sounds a bit woo-woo, but I found it to be true, you know. So a lot of the stuff in her book, I mean, she's a landscape gardener herself, and she's a very interesting story as well. She was she won the Chelsea Flower Show when she was very young, like in her 20s, 21 or something. And she's an Irish woman, but she calls herself a reformed landscape gardener now, because she's come to the sort of realization that the way we relate to our gardens, we're just kind of beating our gardens into submission, and we're not really listening to the garden and what it wants to do and working in harmony with it. Anyway, so I highly recommend that book, though. It's very good. The Garden Awakening, Mary Reynolds. And sort of letting all that seep into me and kind of thinking about previous years, where I would get the lawnmower out and I, you know, it was really noisy and really, you know, rattly in my body and just didn't feel right. Didn't feel like the right thing to do. But again, having not really been super connected with the land, I was just like, well, that's what you do, isn't it? You cut the grass, you get the lawnmower out, isn't it? You know, looks terrible when you don't. So anyway, this year I as the grass started to grow, I've been letting it grow. But then there are patches, I've been letting it grow, and it's amazing and slightly heartbreaking because it's amazing the wild flowers that have come up that you know, I was just blindly mowing over without even realizing, because they never even got a chance to come up. These beautiful wild flowers that are coming up. I don't know the names of any of them, but they're lovely colors. Buttercups, I know them. Dandelions, I know them. And foxgloves. We're coming into the foxglove season, which are these big trumpety things that just erupt out of the ground. Purple, beautiful looking things. And well, not so much the foxgloves, because they're big enough to kind of notice. But there's actually a way more of them in the garden now than there would have been. I kind of left them around the edges. But there are patches in among the wildflowers that are just, you know, it looks a bit like wheat or so. It doesn't look right to me. And I was thinking, yeah, I mean, I want to be with the garden, but I know the garden wants to be with me as well. So I thought it'd be nice to cut bits of it and cut, you know, we have deer that run, that go, not run through the garden, but they go through the garden on their way up the mountain behind us. And there are, you can tell there are other animal trails through the garden. We're on about an acre here, just to give you an idea. So relatively big, but not huge. Anyway, I kind of had this idea. Well, I think what I'd like to do is do scything. Right. Now, if you've listened to previous podcasts, where I was talking about how I learned the piano accordion, I was slightly, whenever I get like a notion like that, I go, okay, well, I wonder where that's coming from. Anyway, I looked it up on YouTube. Is it possible to cut the grass with a scythe? And yeah, it is. So anyway, I ordered a scythe, and it took 3 weeks with all the delays and everything to get here, which meant the grass was pretty tall. But it's fantastic. Oh my God. It is so beautiful. Like, the thing is scary, right? It's a big blade thing. I mean, luckily, because I have, you know, had some experience with, like when I left school, I trained to be a carpenter. So I have some experience with sharpening things and how to not cut your hand off with something like that. But yeah, I could see how it would be frightening, and you do need to sharpen it like regularly. But it's so lovely to use. I mean, it's a long blade. I think it's 30 inches long, the blade, and it curves around. But I'd got it and I had a go for a few days. And then one day I was out just doing it, and I just stopped for a minute, and I realized that all around me, all the gardens had their lawnmowers going, you know, like, yeah, everywhere, like in different tones. And there I was, you know, practically in silence, just, and in this beautiful rhythmic sweeping arc motion that you get into pretty quickly. And, you know, cutting the grass, and it, like, it's not just for long grass, it's actually really fine for short grass. As I say, I've only got it, so I'm not particularly, you know, great. It doesn't look like it's been lawn mowed. But what I've noticed is that the garden, like, what used to happen was when I'd get the lawnmower out before, I'd be plowing along, you know, and if I left the grass on the, if I didn't put the box on the back of the lawnmower and just left the grass there, it looked terrible. It would be this like film of dead matter, which is, you know, good for the grass to return it into the, to return the dead matter into it. But because I think the lawnmower mulched the grass, it wasn't great. So, and then when I take it off, the ground would look kind of traumatized for a couple of days before the grass would start to kind of come back to normal or whatever. Don't have that with the scythe at all. It just looks, it looks like I'd be out, you know, like yesterday, right? I spent about, I don't know, an hour or two out in the garden just with my scythe. And when you look at it, you wouldn't notice. Like, I'd say to Maggie, my wife, I'd say, you know, did you see where I was out here, you know, with the scythe? And she's like, oh, really? Because it you wouldn't notice it, because it's very subtle. Because it doesn't have that kind of dramatic impact on the garden. So, yes, The Scythe is going fantastic. I really like it. If you are getting one, do get the stone to sharpen it with, because you need to sharpen it like every, I don't know, half an hour, 45 minutes, something like that. Which sounds like, but it's all part of it. It's like this, it's a very gentle thing to do. It's very sort of meditative, because as I say, you just get into this swing, and it's, I really like the way you can just, I could just go around flowers, and you know, it's very precise, and you can be very, very precise with it. And then, you know, it goes a little bit blunt, and you have to stop and sharpen it and then continue on. And it's quite a workout as well, even though it doesn't feel like it. But, you know, after 20 minutes or something, you'd be hot and getting going towards sweaty. So, yeah, it's not, when I say it's gentle, you certainly use your body for sure. But, yes, highly recommended for big or small gardens. And you can do varying lengths and varying, like I have part of the garden where we would maybe sit and have a cup of tea, and that's, you know, almost like it would be as short as a lawnmower would leave it. So you can do it whatever way you like, but yeah, very lovely, very gentle, highly recommend it. And thanks for asking me about it, Blake. Now, had somebody else send me a longish enough email in question, saying how much they enjoyed the Bright Future episode, catch-up episode, where I was talking about choosing your inner state and being, you know, sovereign of that. Go back and have a listen to it if you haven't. Bright Future catch-up, I think, is the name. Yes, it is. Anyway, they were saying that in the course of what's happening now with the lockdown, that they were really missing certain aspects of their previous life. They were involved with dancing, tango dancing. And I'll read you the bit about that. They say they're also tango dancers, and that is normally our social life and exercise. In addition, in social Argentinian tango, you receive a large amount of oxytocin on a regular basis. To go from a lot of oxytocin to zero was tough. To go from very warm, huggy contact with lots of people all the time to zero contact with anyone was very tough. So I really heard that oxytocin, if you don't know it, it's one of those chemicals, one of the feel-good chemicals that your brain produces under different circumstances. And in this case, this person is talking about the contact and the dancing gives them oxytocin. So I really feel for that, and I feel for anyone who's missing aspects of their life. Like a lot of artists, you know, jokingly go, well, it doesn't make any difference. Really, the whole lockdown thing hasn't made a huge difference to me, because my life is, you know, somewhat solitary anyway. And that's fine, and that would be my experience. But I know there are other people who are not like that, who really, being social and interacting or whatever the activity is or thing that they do that they miss is really weighing heavily on them. So that got me thinking, there's a couple of things just to kind of think about that are possible, right? I want to illustrate it by telling you a story that I've come across in a few different places. And it's the story of this guy who was taken prisoner of war. I'm not sure when, let's just say Vietnam or something like that, right? Doesn't matter when. So he was in solitary confinement for quite a long while. And before he went off to war, he was a golfer. So what he did was, when he was in solitary confinement, every day in his mind, he would play golf on his local course that he had before going to war. Let's say he was reasonably okay at, but not brilliant. But in his mind, every day he would go through and play each hole. Now, it takes about 4 hours to play golf, play 18 holes. So he would spend, you know, 4 hours thinking about each hole, and making the perfect swing for each hole and where the ball would land and then his next shot, then where that would land and how he would hit it. And he would really, really get into it. And that this was his ritual. So every day he did this, that he was in confinement. And when he was released and he got back home, he and after, you know, everything had settled down, he went out to play golf, and he played 18 holes on his course, and he was fantastic. Like, he just was 100% better than he was before he went to war, which, you know, like anything, you know, golf is something you have to do regularly. Like, you, like, I've seen it now. We just started back to golf here, and I'm rubbish compared to where I was when we stopped, because it's kind of a practice thing, right? But he didn't do any practice, but his first time out on the course, he was brilliant. Okay. Now, that points towards how powerful your mind is, and how you can affect pretty dramatic changes in your body through what you do with your mind. Like, there's lots of evidence and studies for how your mind can affect your body. I should point out here, I am just terrible at remembering stuff like that. Okay, there's certain figures that I remember I'm good at, but things like miles per gallon and there's certain things that just don't go into my, they don't stay in my head. Astrology, that's another one. I've had my natal chart done, I don't know, about four or five things, and they, you know, it's all very interesting and everything. And the person who does the astrology will be explaining transit this, and you, this planet is in this house, and that means this other thing. And it's all fascinating. And it's practically, it's gone out of my head as soon as I walk out the door. So there are certain things that just don't stick. And scientific, you know, studies and percentages and the number of people this and, you know, that kind of thing just doesn't stick in my head at all. So I'm just more of a, I remember stories really well, but not the kind of statistics and this kind of thing, you know, like the number of people this and the number of people that. But there is a lot of evidence for how your mind can influence your body. So, you know, if that's of interest, you go and look up. There's loads of studies about that. But some of the things I know about are, for example, smiling. Like, if you feel a little bit down, if you force yourself to smile for a minute, that will improve your state. You will feel slightly better, and then in some cases you'll feel a lot better. And it's sort of on the same track as what I was saying about the guy playing golf, because the stakes were so high for him and because he had nothing else to do but completely focus on this one thing for 4 hours every day, it had a huge impact. But something as simple as, if you're feeling a little bit down, if you force yourself to smile, that you can improve your mood. Now, that's not something I like to do personally, but it's good to just do it to see that it's true. And then whether you want to choose to do that or not is another thing. But it is interesting to see it working. Another one is power posing. I don't know if you've ever heard of power posing. Again, it's all over YouTube. And it's that thing of, there are certain positions you can put your body into for certain results. So let's say if you're going for a job interview, or if you're going to do something that you're feeling slightly nervous about, if you adopt one of the power poses, the most kind of easy to visualize is the Wonder Woman pose, or I suppose Wonder Woman or Batman, I don't know. You stand quite tall, and you have your feet, you know, shoulder width apart, and then you put your hands on your hips, thumbs facing backwards, and you just stand like that for 5 minutes, and you just it just increases your confidence. And they did a study. Here we go, right? They did a study with people for interviews. People were coming and being interviewed for a job. And let's say there were 10 people and they told half to not do anything, just whatever, do whatever you want kind of thing. And then they told the other half to do this power posing thing before they went in for the interview. And then they asked the interviewers, you know, you can pick five. Who would you like? If you're going to give the job to five people, who would you give it to? And they picked all the people who did the power posing. Okay. And again, that's something you can look up. I probably, you know, got the numbers wrong there, but it's roughly, you know, in that kind of thing. So that's more example of the sort of amazing things that your body can do. In my own experience, since we've been on lockdown, right, I've had to close my craniosacral practice, which is fine because it's hands on, you know, so we don't want to be doing that very close proximity. But because I'm sort of known in the craniosacral world, people have been getting in touch with me going, oh, well, can you work on me from a distance, right? Distance work, which isn't technically craniosacral. But like I've had experience doing that. I don't really talk about it that much. I certainly don't advertise it and I don't charge for it because it's too nutty. I mean, God, craniosacral is hard enough. Getting your head around the idea of, you know, craniosacral therapy and how it actually works is challenging enough for people. And so the idea of that you can work on people from a distance is even more challenging. But yeah, it's lockdown, it's COVID. If somebody asked me for help, sure. So I'm only telling you about this, right, because it's just another example of how amazing our bodies can be. But like, I'm seeing people all around the world. You know, we have a little chat on Messenger or Skype or whatever, and like the same as I would if I was seeing them in person. And then they go and lie down. I work away and for, you know, half an hour or whatever it is, and then they come back and we chat about it as well. And that all sounds lovely, but the results are pretty amazing. Like, there's someone in London that I'm working with who's had chronic pain for like 15 years. They've even seen some other craniosacral therapists, and they're, you know, probably about halfway through, and they're about halfway through their pain. Like, their pain is reduced by about 50%. That's what they say, reporting back to me, right? So that's pretty amazing. Like, and if you're wondering, well, that's just, I mean, the science behind it, apparently other people have looked into this more than I have, but it's to do with quantum physics and quantum entanglement, which is, let me get you a better definition of quantum entanglement. Is the discovery that particles are connected even when separated. Something happens in one particle, it's reflected in the other, even when it's separated in space. Einstein didn't like this. It made him uncomfortable. He described it as spooky action at a distance, which is not a bad description of it. But anyway, yeah, in quantum physics, that's a possible explanation. I don't know how it works. I don't really care how it works. I mean, all I'm concerned about is the person getting better. Yes, they're getting better. Great. Fantastic. So for whatever reason, it works, and it's working with the different people. You know, I'm seeing someone in Sydney, as I say, in London, and you know, different places. Anyway, I'm telling you all of that because if you are suffering from the lack of a particular activity that you really enjoy doing, and you've got, you know, you're in lockdown, you've got a lot of time in your hands, you can be like the guy in the golf, you know, the golfer. You can think about it, like, not just, you know, 5 minutes, but you can really, you know, okay, now I'm going to say, if that person with the tango thing, they can sit down and kind of, or you could even stand up and move. But you can, the more you get into the real, almost like experiencing the activity, whatever the activity is, your body will begin to respond as if it's actually happening. So in that person's case where they were talking about the lack of oxytocin, you can start to generate your own oxytocin. You can focus so much on the activity and what it would feel like that your brain will start producing the oxytocin in the same way. Maybe not to the same degree, but it will certainly help along those lines. Same if you like skiing or you like ice skating or bicycling or whatever it is, and you can't do it because you're in lockdown, you can really get into it in your mind. And the trick is to get into the minutiae of it, the very fine details, not just like say if it's cycling, not just, you know, oh, I think about cycling, oh, I'm just flying down a hill, the wind is in my hair, it's beautiful. That's not going to do it. You have to think about it. Just go through every little thing that you would do on the course of a bike ride. Every little turn of the pedal, the smells, the more senses that you bring in, the more your body will feel like, hey, this is really happening, and start to produce all those feel-good chemicals. So I hope that is of help. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, God, I'm really enjoying this podcast. I've listened to a few now and they're brilliant. And there's so many of them. And I've learned so much from listening to them. And you know what? If I met that John Dalton fella in real life, I'd love to buy him a cup of tea and have a chat with him. I'd love to do that every month if I could. Well, now you can. The tea part at least, because this podcast runs on cups of tea bought for me by people like you who listen to the podcast and send me the price of a cup of tea once a month through the Patreon account. That's patreon.com/John Dalton, gently does it, all one word. And if you're one of those people who already send me cups of tea through Patreon, thanks a million. The tea is lovely and I really appreciate it. Now, the great thing is that if you can't afford to send me the price of a cup of tea or you don't want to, that's fine. You still get exactly the same podcast for free. It's sort of an honor system where the people who can afford it and want to pay for the people who can't or don't want to. So it's all lovely. So if you'd like to send me a cup of tea once a month, you can do that through Patreon. I'd really appreciate it. It makes a huge difference to me. And then I had another email from somebody. I don't really want to read out their name. Let's call them Bill. And they were talking about when I was talking about grounding, which is walking around your bare feet outside on the dirt, and how good that is for you, and recommending everyone do it. Or not recommending everyone do it, but just, you know, it's a good thing to do if you want to do something good. And it's something that's easily missed. But again, lots of science on grounding and how good it is for your body. And they were in their email that this person was saying that they appreciated that and that they were asking about another kind of sensitivity. And they said, I think I'm a pretty sensitive person with electricity, like the electrical wires in the walls of a house. Whenever the power goes out, I feel so much calmer, like I can finally relax. I'm even more satisfied with the air, if that makes sense, and just feel overall better. It's like my body can finally take a few breaths in my home. My body feels tense with the electricity on, and I get used to it and only really notice when the power is off and the difference is noticeable, almost striking. I think I've always been this way. Maybe everyone is. I even think my dislike and frustration with computers is related to my sensitivity with electricity, if this makes sense. I was wondering if you have any insights about this, any ways to help manage the subtle ways of electricity's influence in a home. So I've come across people with this before, just in my craniosacral practice, and it like with sensitivities generally, a lot of it has to do with your sort of nervous system and your configuration, or just the configuration of your system. Like I've discovered that people are sensitive in different ways to different things. Like I've, you know, taken case histories or worked with people who've, you know, that I'd ask them, oh, have you had any drugs in your life? You know, any hardcore drugs? And they'd list this like, list of drugs that would kill a horse, right? And they're fine, you know, I sort of put my hands on their system and they're fine. It just hasn't really affected them at all. And then other people, they'd have very mild sort of drug exposure and it's really messed with their system. Similarly, I'd say to people, you know, oh, do you, you know, drink? Yes, I drink. How much do you drink? Oh, you know, not too much. Maybe two bottles a night, two bottles of wine. Yeah, yeah, maybe more at the weekend. And I think, God, you know, that's a lot. I wouldn't say this stuff, but I'd be thinking it like, and then I put my hands on them and they're fine. Their system is fine. You know, like you probably know people like this who can just drink and, you know, it's fine. Or, you know, the usual, or the, not the usual, but the one that's trotted out a lot, you know, particularly for people who are smoking and usually smoking and coughing and people are saying, oh, you know, you should probably stop smoking. And they go, oh no, my grandfather was 96 and smoked every day of his life practically. And smoked right up until his death and he was fine. And it's the same, like some people's bodies and systems are predisposed towards some things and are unaffected by others. So it's the same with different sensitivities. Like there's a whole group of people who are very sensitive to electromagnetic frequencies, not electricity now, the way this person is talking about, but just Wi-Fi, cell phones, computers, all the sort of stuff that we just take for granted. It makes them really ill. And it's, again, scientifically, there's a whole group of people that will say, no, that's not scientifically proven. And on the other side, you've got these people who are going, well, I feel sick. So it doesn't matter whether it's scientifically proven if they feel sick around this stuff. I know for myself, say with cell phones, if somebody calls me on my phone, I can talk to them for maybe 10, 20 seconds. And then I'll feel my head heating up on that side. My ear will start to get hot. Not my ear, but in my skull. So I'll very quickly plug my little headphones in and talk to them that way. So for me, my sensitivity is such that I can, once it's not close to my head, it's fine. But if it is close to my head, I don't like it. You know, so if I'm walking around, I see somebody and they're just having this long conversation with the phone stuck to the side of their head, I almost feel uncomfortable just looking at them because I think it couldn't be good for them, but I don't know. But say for myself, that's where my sensitivity would stop. I know when I started seeing people for craniosacral, and this is, you know, 30 whatever years ago, where there was a lot of less EMF around. But even with that, I couldn't have a watch on. I still can't have a watch on actually when I'm working, because I could feel the battery. You know, it doesn't, when I say I could feel the battery, it's not like I could, you know, had this, you know, brr, brr, brr on my wrist, but it would be irritating. It was just like an irritation. And I remember I used to have to take my shoes off as well, which is, you know, if you're trying to build a craniosacral practice, the last thing you would do is do anything weird. So having to take your shoes off didn't help me. But anyway, I just couldn't. I found it too, I couldn't really get a connection. Couldn't really feel as much as I could when I had my shoes off. Not bare feet, but just had my shoes off. And like now that I know a bit more about grounding, I understand what that's about. I don't have to do that now, but I did back then. So with this, just speaking specifically now to this person with the electricity. So number one, I would say that if that's the way you feel, it's true. I treated people for tinnitus through the years. Tinnitus is like a ringing in your ears. And there's lots of different reasons for tinnitus. Like you can get it from if you worked in machinery for a long time and you didn't wear ear protections, you can get tinnitus. If you worked in the music industry, a lot of people get tinnitus as they get older. Various like accidents and things like that can cause tinnitus as well. And, you know, I was able to help people to greater or lesser degrees, depending on what the cause is. But there was a group of people who have tinnitus and they are convinced that they can hear the gas in the gas lines under their house. They have to, you know, if they move out of the city away from gas lines, their tinnitus goes. So the same, you know, I would say to them, like, if that's, if you feel that, that that's what it is strongly, then yeah, sure. I know I'm certainly, I don't feel the electricity thing in the house, but I can feel power lines. Like there's, I wouldn't like to live, it sounds like I wouldn't like to, I just wouldn't live in a house where there were power lines going over the house. I think that is too much. I think that's just not good for your body. Like there are power lines that go along the back of the one corner of the garden, and that's okay. But, you know, I can stand under them and I can kind of feel them. You feel the effect that they have. So like with grounding, and again, this is just me just giving you my perspective on it. It's not based in anything, but I would approach it a bit like the people who have who are very affected by not being grounded. Like for me, walking around outside on the dirt 15 minutes or as often as I can, and like we've got wooden floor in the house here, so I'll try and walk around bare feet in the house as well. But if you're, you know, in an apartment, or if you can't, there are lots of people who can't do that. They don't live in the country and their gardens are paved or whatever. So there's lots of ways that you can use the sockets in your house, because of like the way electricity is in a house, everything has to be earthed so that, you know, it minimizes the effect of an electric shock. So somewhere your house will be earthed. Now it's different from country to country. Like in Ireland and the UK, the plug sockets, you can see the earth on them. But there are other countries where it's just two little sockets, and that's different. But one way or another, your house has to be earthed. And even if it's not, you can put an earth rod outside in the earth and run the cable in, and you know, you can get earth mats, you can get earthed sheets for your bed. There's, you know, there's a whole load of stuff, you can look it up. So I would say it's a variation on that. Like if you've got sensitivity to the power, to the electricity, you could explore earthing. And then every house has got a main switch. You know, this may not be practical with if you live with other people, but you can always turn the main switch off. You know, you can schedule your use of electricity the way people who don't have, you know, say people who use water from a tank, like in a tiny house, or if they are you're just using rainwater, for example, they don't have long showers. They are very conscious of how they're using their water. You could do the same with electricity. You could say when you get up, do all the things that you have to do, and then turn the main switch off in the house. And, you know, do like you say, well, if you're not going to be there, you don't need to, you know, that wouldn't matter. But say if you're working from home and you say you're working on laptops or something like that, you could work on batteries if you're not too sensitive to the battery in the laptop. But yeah, that's a suggestion. Turn on and off the main switch. Like if you're not using electricity for anything specific, like washing or cooking or watching the TV or whatever, then yeah, if I was you, I would try that out. I would try turning off the main switch and see if that helped. I know for people who have that electromagnetic sensitivity, like Wi-Fi, cell phones, and all that kind of thing, like there's a place, Green Bank, in West Virginia, that's I think it's like half the population in Green Bank are people who suffer from this. And it's actually a radio silence kind of zone for, I think there's a big telescope or something near it. So it's blanked out. So there's no Wi-Fi. It's a lot of the stuff that bothers the people with electromagnetic sensitivity is not there. So people have moved to this town because it was having such a deleterious effect on their life, being out with Wi-Fi and cell phones and cell towers and all this kind of stuff, that they have moved there to get away from it. So maybe if you can, maybe, you know, you'd sort of have to know for yourself, like, if you're out in nature, is it easier for you? Would it be easier if you lived in nature? Is it possible to move? I don't know. But I would try turning off the main switch. And just while I'm talking about that, there's a big kind of movement away from this 5G thing that's coming in for lots of different reasons, because it's like it's tipped over into too much. Like with each new thing that we have added, like, you know, before cell phones were around, nobody had a little, you know, battery operated charging device throbbing away beside their head when they slept. And now a lot of people, you know, the last thing they look at is their phone, and then they'll plug it in to charge overnight and then wake up and it's the first thing they look at. Even the blue light that comes off a phone messes around with your circadian rhythms. And, you know, I mean, we're very adaptive to all these different things like Wi-Fi. We've just kind of adapted to it. Some people don't. And the people who have electromagnetic sensitivity, there is a school of thought that says, well, they're just the canaries in the coal mine. They just feel it, but we all feel it, but they're just aware of it. I'm not sure. I don't know. But it seems like 5G has just gone across the line and it's just quite bad for your body. And now again, like, scientific studies are they're easily bought, let's put it that way. So you can have a scientific study that says pretty much whatever you want it to say. So I think you just have to sort of read, do your discernment, read up on it, see if it's something you think is going to be deleterious. But there's a mounting sort of feeling that it isn't. It's too much. It's beyond, you know. Now, I want to thank Gail Madeira for getting in touch and telling me that my link to the Argyle Pimps doesn't work. So the Argyle Pimps are it's the theme music, you know. I've had it since the beginning, and the link that I was using it doesn't go anywhere anymore. I think they've got rid of their website. So I've found a new link to them, which I've put in, and you can actually buy they've got an album. You can buy their album. So I'm very happy to give them a little, you know, plug or shout out or whatever you want to call it. And the link since Gail pointed out to me, so the last, I don't know, four or five episodes, certainly the link in this episode at the bottom, there's always a link at the bottom that says, you know, thanks for the music, the Argyle Pimps. Now it goes to their Bandcamp, where you can download their album, I think for $5 or something like that. It's very reasonable. And so if you like a lot of people get in touch and say they really like the theme music. So if you want to hear the whole song or buy the whole song or buy the whole album, you can go to that link and do that. Okay, so that's it for this little catch up. I hope you're well, I hope you're of good cheer, and I'll talk to you again soon.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti. We are the Argyle Pimps.